The Grand Chartreuse in the French Alps is one of the world's most ascetic monasteries. In 1984, German filmmaker Philipp Grönig wrote to the Carthusian Order for permission to make a film about them. Their reply? Maybe. We'll get back to you. 16 years later, Philipp Grönig was surprised to get a letter in the mail, out of the blue, from the monastery. They were ready. So Grönig, without artificial lighting, without a crew, spent 6 months living the life of a monk and filmed. The result was the documentary called Into Great Silence, a film with no score, no voiceover, and no archival footage. A full-length feature film that, like the monks' lives, is almost entirely without words. Philipp Grönig spoke with Anne Strainchamps about his film.
Basically, I set about on two thoughts. One level of thought was, when you do film, you always deal with time. Time is the most powerful and the deepest and the profoundest tool that you have as a filmmaker. You have image, sound, and time. And when you make a film with the absence of speech and the absence of a sort of evident action, then suddenly that element of time becomes so very, very strong, and you can create an inner space for an audience which will actually alter their perception and which will alter their being, which is very much what a monastery is. So it was creating something that is analogous to a monastery, because a monastery also is a place where the structure of time and the rigidness with which time is structured and you go through your own life in circles, kind of, is changing the monk and is making him approach a certain state of mind. And on the other level, it was very simple that if you want to make a film that's really a spiritual film, you shouldn't speak about spirituality at all, because spirituality or the question of God or the questions of religion are extremely personal for everyone. So the more that the filmmaker would sort of express himself or herself in explaining what this monk is doing right now, the less you would enter your own spiritual space. So it was a simple decision to sort of go in there, live the life they do, rely on the fact that it would change my perception, and open a space for the viewer to find their own spiritual way.
So that rather than explain to the viewer what spiritual life is like, you wanted to bring the viewer as close as possible to them having a spiritual experience of their own?
We live in a time when we have very much information, very much answers, and the profounder level of a human being is the level of questions. So the more answers, the more information, the more explanation you give to people, the more you take them away from the space of questions that they have a right to.
There were some moments in the film when you have close-ups of the faces of the monks and they're just staring right at the camera. Some of the first ones I thought looked really peaceful, really tranquil. I thought maybe I had never seen such peace in somebody's eyes before. And some of the later ones I thought they looked like the faces of people do who have suffered a lot or who have withstood suffering for a long time. But maybe I was reading that into them. What do you think?
Well, I think you're a very precise viewer. I think the very first ones you saw were very old monks who were very high in the hierarchy. In the order, they would say, those are people who are very far advanced spiritually. And then you see the faces of a lot of the younger monks who are actually very much fighting with themselves. There's a saying in the Charterhouse that the first 25 years are really difficult, but then it starts to be really good, right? And I think that's what you see in those faces. And so in the end of the film, again, you see the faces of very old monks and you realize that they are very, very much at ease with themselves. But Of course, if it was as easy as that, that you go into a monastery and you chop your own wood and you don't talk very much and you become happy at once, then everybody would do it.
We'd all be lining up at the monastery doors. So what is the nature of the suffering? What is it that's so difficult? I mean, not physically, but in an interior sense.
In an interior sense, of course, the deprivation is also very hard, and also the not being able to speak very much. You do have friends in there. You have friends, like, in the sense that you meet some of the monks in the cloister, and you have smiles at one another, and with others you don't. But it is a very lonely thing, and the absence of language, on the one hand, the presence of objects and the presence of light and of sounds and of what the world is becomes much stronger. But on the other hand, what we are very attached to, all of our sense of logic and of control of the world, that gets lost. And you find yourself hardly being able to make a plan for your very next future. And this is a feeling of very deeply being sort of deprived of the sense of the control that you usually have, which is a process that all monasteries, I think, in all societies aim at. But that is a very big suffering.
It gives you a feeling of great respect for these monks, don't you think? I mean, perhaps the stereotype of a monk is a very gentle, peaceful person, and yet I wound up thinking, these are enormously strong people. They must have tremendous inner strength. And also, these are such risk takers. I mean, what kind of people in our culture are willing to give up everything, absolutely everything, on the chance that they'll gain everything spiritually?
They are very strong. I'm very happy that that comes across. I was surprised how strong they are and how free they are in themselves, and also how radical they are. They're amongst the most radical people I've ever met. Now, for the giving up, they would always say they are not really giving anything up, which I can understand very much. I'm not attached to material things at all, in a way. But basically, you can sort of say to buy a Porsche is not a bad thing in itself. The problem is that the time you waste, not making the money, that's not the difficult part, but the time you waste trying to choose which Porsche you should buy and then trying to choose how to keep it in shape and so on, that all takes away so much of your lifetime for completely nothing that it's much better not even to think about it. So they would always say they're not giving up very much. They're just giving up the stuff that is standing between you and your own life.
Tell you that this was watching your film was a fascinating experience, as much in some ways about watching myself as about watching the film. You know, I began sort of watching my own emotional reaction, and after the first sort of bit of fascination with the details of the monks' lives and, you know, figuring, okay, where do they live and how do they get their food, and oh, that's where how their food arrives. But then beyond that, there was a feeling of kind of relief, of pleasure in the silence and the very slow passage of time. I think the best way I could describe it is like taking a really deep breath and realizing that in fact you've been breathing shallowly for days. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe we've all been breathing shallowly for years. I know what you mean when you say that. In a way, when you watch the film, you watch yourself. Which is I'm very happy that you say that, because that's what I tried. I always said I'd try to make a film which would become a monastery, transform itself into a monastery more than explain something about a monastery. And of course, when you're a monk or a nun, you don't go into a monastery in order to learn about monasteries. You go into a monastery in order to learn about yourself. So when you say that the film brings you to your own questions, then that means that it actually does recreate that monastic experience, which is about encountering yourself in order to go deeper.
The monks, occasionally you would record little bits of conversation they have. I think they have some time for conversation once a week for a little bit. They talked at one point about how they see their own life as symbolic. And there are certain symbols that you return to over and over again. During the film, there's a beautiful image of just an empty metal pot drying after it's been washed. What did that image say to you?
Oh, that was just one of the details that was in my cell. When you live alone and you live in silence, you become much more aware of the material objects that are around you. In a certain way, something happens that it seems as if the world, the creation, whatever surrounds you, is like coming towards you and becomes much more alive and much more beautiful. And I wanted to sort of share that with the audience. That's a very simple thing. That's just the tray in which you wash your dishes. And after you've done that, you always have to put it up against the wall to let the water drip off, and then it dries. It just became such a beautiful object. And I thought, that's interesting to show that. It's just a metal thing. And suddenly it's as if it becomes alive, as if it gets a meaning, which is what happens. When you live in a monastery, you realize that all of what you can see, all of what your senses bring to you, is actually helping you enroot yourself in the world and be present in the world in your own life.
If you can slow down enough to look and to see. I mean, it's in some ways what I'm left with after seeing the film. It's those images that stay in my mind. You know, a simple glass sitting on a table and the sunlight shining through it so you can see the little kind of specks and motes of stuff floating in the water. Or a piece of fabric hanging and just very gently swaying in the wind. I keep thinking of those images.
That's I think, what all artists and especially all filmmakers have always been trying to do. When you look at the Andy Warhol films, or when you look at the Soderbergh films, or when you look at a lot of films, it's about getting the viewer to be able to see and to hear and to be in their own time when they left the cinema. A bad film stops when it's over. A good film starts when it's over.
Philip Grinnig's documentary about the monks of the Grand Chartreuse is called Into Great Silence, and Strange Champ spoke with him.